Hey, Chris Manning here from Lockdown Cavs. Coming up on today's show, we're going to dive into the next three chapters in our Vintage Cavs book club, and we're going to talk about the latest little bit of news surrounding the NBA draft. That's all coming up today on Lockdown Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast with a hint of Lockdown Waiters Island thrown in there for good measure because we have to. Part of the Lockdown Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Cavaliers. Your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. This calls the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the cube.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, how are you at the end of the week here?
Pretty good. It's Thursday, hard to believe. I had to think about that for a second. But shout out to our guy Dion Waiters. Like you said, this Waiters Island is the stocks are gonna be booming. If you, Chris, you have like a hoard of them, so you sir are gonna be a very rich man in terms of Dion Waiters.
I never left. It's like me, Zach Lowe's probably still in there. Yeah. I don't think there's like very many like any other there's like any other people like very many other people left, but I'm there.
I feel it.
Yeah, you know, Evan, I want to say before we get into the like the actual stuff we're gonna talk about, it was a delight because to hear Zach Lowe and Chris Herring spend like 7 minutes talking about the Cavs, I felt validated in my life choices.
And Larry Nance Jr. got six man of the year considerations, which I think fair. Yeah,
which I feel validated, honestly. Like, I don't usually need a lot of external validation, but, like, when like, what I see is seen by arguably the smartest basketball writer at work right now, I feel good about it. And Zach Lowe is right. Let's burn the Cavs' identity to the ground. Let's get a new
one. Well, first off, I'm flattered that you think I'm the smartest basketball writer you know, because I, too, picked Larry Nance in our award show as the sixth man of the year for the Cavs.
Yes. Evan, you're perfect.
Oh, gee willikers, thanks. Gosh dang. I still torn. There's no reported cases. At least the NBAPA is emailing me and other journalists as well, telling like with quick updates, letting you know that there's zero tests, positive tests in the bubble. So, knocking on wood, stays that way. But it's a lot of fun having basketball back, and it just makes me wish the Cavs were part of it for some reason. Yeah, and they look like the Nets probably last night, but it'd still be fun to have them back.
Yeah, I was feeling that kind of wishing for that, just to get something new to watch. And obviously, like, you know, WNBA is going to be back, baseball coming back. Like, there's going to be other stuff to watch. But that's going to be exciting to kind of see the other stuff. Evan, I want to just ask you, though. I'm just going to ask you one question about this before we talk about the news of the day. Do you think that we will get New Mutants first or Cavs basketball?
Can you say that again?
Do you think we're going to get Cavs basketball or the New Mutants movie first? If you don't get this joke, we're just going to move on.
Oh, no, I know the Mutants movie's been delayed like a zillion times at this point. I think we're going to get Cavs basketball before then, because that's like the last movie I think Disney hasn't pulled the plug on it yet entirely. And
it's like been made for like 2 years. It's quite weird.
Yeah, just release it as digital if you really want people to see it at this point.
Put it on the plus.
Yeah.
I'm an X-Men person, so just give it to me. But, Evan, the NBA draft lottery is going to move up 5 days from August 25th to August 20th. The NBA draft is still going to be on October 16th, so not any change there. According to the reporting on this, the Combine, which typically occurs in mid-May, has still not been officially rescheduled, but it is still evaluating, quote, potential dates and formats to hold the events. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what a combine looks like amid a pandemic, frankly. That's well above our pay grade. But do you have any thoughts on the lottery moving up a little bit?
It just gives me something to talk about right about a little earlier, I guess. And like you said, 6 days early. So like, if you're picturing like one party balloon slowly deflating and like sinking to the ground, that's kind of how I feel about it. It's still, I think it's silly the lottery is this far away. We could just have it done and over with at this point, but whatever. I guess you have to invite the Phoenix Suns and everybody else, the Washington Wizards, to the bubble just to prolong the inevitable here. But it just gives me more to talk about. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm glad about it. You know, I'm gonna dive up into some of the draft stuff. Like, we're gonna start doing kind of one off on prospects, like with LaMelo Ball. So, like, next week, as a little tease, Ricky O'Donnell's gonna come on, talk about Anthony Edwards. So we'll talk about him. And I think we're gonna try and do like a lot of the top prospects even before the lottery. And then obviously we're gonna be doing mock drafts, not just with us, but with around the whole network. I know we did two of those, I believe, and then we haven't done one since the last one, but I confirmed with some people in our network that we are going to do another one. And, you know, I mean, we're going to, I think, assuredly talk about Wiseman, Denny Avija, probably have to do an Obi Toppin show, Killian Hayes, Onyeka Okongwu, Isaac Okoro, like Devin Vassell. Like, I think there's a lot of guys we can justify pods on, and we probably should. I mean, it's good content at the very least. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's at least something for us to talk about while there's no other Cavs basketball. Mm-hmm. But, Evan, let's go back in the time machine. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about vintage Cavs. First chapter here is about the miracle of Richfield. Mm-hmm. And for me, the whole this, I don't think you learn like a ton about that game itself in this chapter. But I want to say that what to me really is the hammered home point is really the first line. It's from Terry Peluto here. Quote, if you grew up during the LeBron James era of Cavalier basketball, the miracle of Richfield means nothing to you. And I think to some degree, for me, as someone who was born in 1993, and like this game is not like searchable really on YouTube in the way that like Game 7 of the 2016 Finals is, or any other modern big Cavs moment, that game is just sort of not viewable in that way. And I don't have like a strong connection to it, even if I understand that it's important.
Yeah, no, I don't have a huge connection to it. I know it's just that it's a big moment in Cavs history, for obvious reasons. It's like the first really big monumental playoff moment in Cavs history, or playoff history at least. I mean, after that they became kind of infamous just to be Michael Jordan's whipping boy in the 90s, so that's always fun to think about. But it's just cool to think, like, I don't know. This is just to, like, Terry Peluto said he's nostalgic for this era of Cavs basketball, and you can, like, definitely feel in this chapter that how potent that nostalgia is, because he's really gushing with excitement talking about this team. And, like you said, like, we obviously weren't alive at the time. This is in 1976 when this happened, so I was negative 20-plus years old at that point, so no, less than that. But either way, It's just cool to see, and the fact that the Cavs just kind of have these exciting moments, and sometimes they're like the most bizarre and surreal moments too in the playoffs. Like, for us, it's 2016, but for people like Terry Peluto and our parents' age, I don't want to age my parents too much here, but it's the miracle of Richfield.
Yeah, no, I mean, my dad was 21 during this game. He was living in Florida at the time, so I don't think this like game matters to him really. But
he was so in the seats to get Tom Brady there. We all know, Chris. You're a savant with your Buccaneers helmet on your bookshelf with the book that said Tom on the back spine. So,
you know me, just
football Nostradamus, Chris Manning, everyone.
Yeah, new Lockdown hosts of Lockdown Buccaneers. I actually don't know who hosts Lockdown Bucks, but I bet you they're a nice human. Other thing in this chapter that I wanted to say is insane. Can't be Russell saying no one from Cleveland talked to me before the draft. Like, they talked to his agent. They never talked to him.
And the Cavs.
Yeah. The 1970s NBA draft just seemed like absolute clusters. And, you know, also just the playoff tickets being cheap, like $12.50 for a floor seat is like insane, considering what they cost now and the type of people that get to sit in those seats. Mm-hmm. But, man, not talking to Can't be Russell before a draft is just like very fitting for all of this.
Yeah, it's really weird to think about. Austin Carr really was another. I mean, I feel like Austin Carr knew he was going to be the first pick in the draft. I feel like he was kind of the consensus just because he's arguably one of the greatest basketball players of all time, but gave the same impression. Like, didn't know. He was in class, I think, when he felt like he got pulled out of class to be informed he was drafted by the Cavaliers, then he went back to class. And maybe it just shows, one, like, the draft wasn't as big a deal as it is now, and, like, two, it makes me wonder, are there other prospects out there, like, in the modern Cavs era that have kind of been hoodwinked like that? Like, I do wonder if, like, Anthony Bennett really did know. He knew. I feel like his agent told him ahead of time, but, like, did Anthony Bennett genuinely know, like, the day of the draft, I'm going to go first overall? Like, it's just kind of weird to think, like, the Cavs, even back in the 70s, played with their cards way too close to their chest sometimes, and it's just really wild stuff. Like, yeah, no, I can't believe that. And also, just another fun note, The Kings were based in Kansas City and Omaha, so they played in two different cities, and that's just weird to think about as well, but like I guess that was a common thing because the Cavs split time for a little bit when they first started, but I don't know, it's just weird to think like there are teams that had to like jump between city and city, which granted isn't far apart, but I just thought that was an interesting note as well.
Yeah. One other thing, Evan, that is just insane. Mm-hmm. Them talking about how Jim Jones never drank water during games, and the quote from a man named Hoff, whose last name is Hofker, can't find his first name right now, but he later became the Cavs podiatrist. So this man's like a doctor.
He's still
with
the team.
He says, quote, yeah, still with the team. Quote, that was back when you weren't supposed to drink water when playing.
Isn't that so weird to think? Like, I'm a little baby bitch when I can't have my water after I work out. Like, I couldn't even imagine playing like a full contact sport where this is an era where players probably smoked like a train and everything else too. So like you need that water to stay hydrated, yo. And like cramping up. This is an aside, but can we agree that like Charlie horses are like one of the worst things you can ever experience?
They're garbage.
Absolute garbage. But I can't even imagine not being imagine being the guy who gets bullied because you want a drink of water. In today's era, like that's pretty much what it would have been like. Everyone would have judged you hardcore if you wanted water after playing a full professional level sport like that. Like that's just so weird to think about.
Yeah.
Well, water's not the official drink of the NBA, like Michelob Ultra or whatever it is now. So.
Yeah, but I mean that's basically water.
That's true. That's very true.
Michelob Ultra sponsored the pod. The only time I've ever had Michelob Ultra, dude, that's the official beer of the Akron Marathon Series. So if like when I ran like the half or like ran a relay, like that was like the beer you got with your ticket.
Oh, did you want to something? So it's not locked on Cavs, if I don't dump on Athens or OU at some point. Did you know Athens is like considered one of the worst areas for COVID in the state? Just saying.
Yeah, I don't condone that or Larry Householder being an OU alum. I don't condone either of those things. Tough week for me, Evan.
Yeah,
okay.
It has been a tough
real week. Tough week for me.
I spat some soccer facts, though, but back to the book club.
Yeah, world's biggest Christian Pulisic fan here. But, Evan, I think it's time for a break, actually.
Why don't you tell everyone about Rock Auto. Yeah, I was going to say, let's hop in the car. Let's turn on some Locked On Cavs. Today's sponsor is RockAuto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions such as, is your Odyssey an LX or an EX? God, if I know. And wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing only the brand his warehouse happens to carry. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket, so why aren't you getting on rockauto.com and taking care of this yourself? RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks at RockAuto.com and get it delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose from the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
Please go do that. Please go support them and thank them for supporting us. And we're going to come right back, talk about the next chapter in our book club here right after this. Evan.
Hey.
Just got to say.
It's like we're opening up the show again. How's it going?
Look, Ted Stepien's legacy as Cavs owner is like...
Could you imagine throwing softballs off Terminal Tower into like an unassuming crowd down below
and like actually hurting people?
The 80s were wild, man. Like I hate people who say I was born in the wrong era, but if I was born in the 80s and I got to live in the same timeline as wacky Ted Stepien, I think I would have a good time for a little bit.
Yeah, he is like Dan Snyder but probably worse, because Dan Snyder like owns a team with a racial slur and, like, the sexual assault stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I take that back. I retract that statement. But he's pretty bad. He's, like, an 8 on the Snyder scale.
I think an 8's fair.
It depends which Dan Snyder you're talking about, though. It could be the Redskins, or sorry, the Washington football team's Dan Snyder or Nickelodeon's Dan Snyder, which is a conspiracy theory I'll unpack at a different time. Let's just go off some of his other weird stuff that he did as owner. He had a polka fight song for the team, which I believe was his softball team. He spent $5,000 to have that produced, which I don't know what that is in 1980 money. He had a sleazy dance team called the Teddy Bears. He hosted lingerie shows in a place called the Competitors Club. He may not be able to run a basketball team, but I can run a lingerie show, he told people attending his shows. And he also knew a big guy named Don Boot Buttry, who was known as the fat man eating beer cans, who indeed bit into beer cans. He also ate raw eggs and stuffed donuts in his mouth. Ted Stepien just seems like a weird dude. Like, not only is he like Dan Snyder on the creepy owner scale, he's like the creepy uncle who shows up in the Hawaiian shirts, who says like some really sleazy, inappropriate stuff about like your teenage cousin kind of guy.
Yeah.
So if I got a little too specific there, we can't personally relate, but it's just like, you get that vibe.
Yeah. Here's a real quote from Ted Stepien. Quote, it's a fact having more white players would be beneficial from a marketing standpoint.
That's a Don Sterling quote right there, baby.
But if we have 11 blacks and win a title, that's great. My guy.
Oh, my God. I had that.
Wow.
Yeah, no, that's something. Well, do you think Ted Stepien brought girls in the locker rooms to admire his African-American players?
I have a lot of questions about what he was like with the players as an owner that are not really addressed in this book.
You know, I feel like I blazed through this chapter because now I'm, like, looking at this in slow motion. It's a real eyebrow raiser, though. It's an old head scratcher. I feel like the Cavs would want to distance themselves from Ted Stepien more than anything. Like, yeah, thanks for founding the team, but please stay. I mean, I know he's a very old man who is not much longer for this world, but it's just still, I don't know.
Yeah, his leg.
I don't know.
There's nothing really positive to say about him as an owner. Like, him hiring Bill Musselman is just like an outright disaster if you read through some of this. Musselman ends up getting, like, fired in the middle of training camp as they kind of get rid of him and they have to move in another direction. They hire a guy who, Don Delaney, who's a friend of Stepien, to coach Stepien's pro softball team, the same one he, like, threw balls at off the ceiling, off the terminal tower. He got to know Bill Fitch and stuff. Mm-hmm. NBA novice. He gets hired to be the general manager. That's crazy, you know.
Yeah.
Like that's just bizarre. And the other thing that's bizarre is that in '83, before he sells the team, he's literally on a radio station in Toronto, like talking about moving the team.
I think they were going to be called the Toronto Towers too. I did some research into this after reading that because it is fitting that the Cavs own the Raptors at this point, especially in the playoffs, that the Toronto could have owned the Cavs at one point. It's like life finds a way. So that was really funny when, like, Pete Franklin, a radio host, said he referred to TS instead of Ted Stepien and meant too stupid because a lot of the decisions he made as an owner were quite stupid. It's just a weird dude. Like, just an odd person.
So I can understand, like, why people don't necessarily, like or love Dan Gilbert. I've certainly, you know, said things on here and written things that are critical of Dan. Mm-hmm. But this is, like, incompetence. At the very least, Dan is going to spend money. He's going to, like, until he fires them, he's going to have competent people in place. Like, this literally, by the way Terry Pluto writes it and talks about it here in this chapter, is, like, Ted Stepien almost single-handedly cost the Cavs an NBA franchise. And Evan and I could, you know, I don't even know what I'd be doing right now.
After him because teams can't trade consecutive first.
There's a draft site. There's a draft site named after him. A great draft site.
A very good draft site. The draft site I refer to most when it comes to draft analysis when Trevor Magnotti's busy now that he's a married man. Congrats again, Trev. Yeah, no, it's just a really surreal rule, and I'm pretty sure, isn't it James Worthy, who the Cavs ended up trading for a bunch of fodder from the Lakers? Well, the pick that became James Worthy, if I remember correctly, but I'm double-checking it, so I don't sound like a total idiot here, but, like, the Cavs almost were lost to Toronto, and the NBA
had to step in and give the Cavs picks because of how badly Ted Stepien blundered things. Yeah, no, it was James Worthy. He was the number one pick in the 1982 draft, and the Cavs traded that pick for Don Ford, and the Cavs could have drafted James Worthy and had a franchise-altering talent. A very, very good prospect in James Worthy, who was a three-time champion, a Finals MVP, a seven-time All-Star. No, and all around, just, you know, one of the great Lakers greats, but no, Ted Stepien had to blow it, and it's just, it's fascinating to see, but if you and I were alive for this, Chris, like, the Cavs make me want to rip out my hair some days. Like, I think I would be bald if Ted Stepien was still owning the Cavs and I was covering them at the time.
You and I would just be, like, on the podcast being, like, our brains just literally melting out of our heads.
No, I really, it's just, it's, like, it's surreal to think, like, how ass backwards. Like, I get it, like, I don't get it, like, you're trying to, like, desperately pursue the playoffs, or you're desperately trying to pursue relevancy, and you do it in, like, the most backwards and unconventional way possible. Maybe that is a little Dan Gilbert-esque, because Dan likes to be outside of the box and think he's the smartest basketball mind in the room with his coaching hires, at least. But no, Ted Stepien was, like, he was a special brand of stupid, and he can get out and never come back.
Yeah, he absolutely should
be. Also, I feel like such a terrible person because I confused him with Nick Meletti when I was talking about critical for the foundation of the team. No, the Cavs have fully distanced themselves from Ted Stepien, and I'm really sorry if the family, the Melettis, are listening right now.
Nick Meletti, like, obviously used other people's money, which is very detailed well in this book, and it's, like, he made a bunch of money on this ultimately.
But he wasn't a creep.
Yeah, but, like, seemingly, like, a decent owner.
Yeah, no, good guy, good heart. Just Ted Stepien was not.
Yes. No, not at all. All right, one last break. Then we're going to talk about the man who succeeded Ted Stepien as owner right after this. All right, let's talk about Gordon Gund. Mm-hmm. Evan, I'm going to send this to you here. This was a different version of Gordon Gund that I did not really know until this.
Same here. Well, I didn't really know. This is probably terrible for me to say. Maybe I need to brush up on team history a bit more the longer I host this show with you. I never knew he was blind. And, like...
Really?
Yeah. Like, I never got the joke that Carlos Boozer lied to a blind man. I was like, oh, I guess there's somebody who, like, just got swindled or bamboozled. I just... You know, it's like that Chris Pratt meme where,
I never would have... Just so you know, I never would have admitted this. This is incredible by you. I appreciate you, Evan.
Oh, well, you know what? It's the brutal honesty. Maybe it's because I've been watching your comedic companion, Joe Pera, too much, and I'm just being too honest at this point. But,
Look, Evan, I'm tweeting pictures of the Joker. Like, we're in the worst timeline.
You say the worst. I think it's the best. I mean, all things given, this is, like, 2020 is, like, the worst year ever. 1969 can give it a run for its money from historical context, but... It's been pretty bad, but yeah, no, I never knew. I never knew Gordon Gund was blind, and I feel, like, really bad because now I get the joke. But like I said, it's like that Chris Pratt meme. Like, I'm too afraid to ask at this point, so I just went along with it. But you know, Gordon Gund saved the Cavs and was a hell of an owner. And I mean, Dan is special in his own regard because he opened his checkbook when LeBron came back the second. I mean, he did it the first time around, but like the second time around, he really opened up his checkbook to build a championship squad. But like Gordon Gund, like, just kind of did everything right. Just like brought Joe Tate back and made the right coaching hires and general manager hires, and like just built a really solid team. Like you and I said, Chris, if Michael Jordan didn't exist, the early Gordon Gund owned Cavs because he owned the team up until LeBron was like around when LeBron was drafted. Maybe it was like his rookie or sophomore year when he sold. I can't remember, but it's been, he's a good owner, and, like, I do wish some days the Cavs had, like, that kind of stability like they did under Gordon Gund.
Yeah, there's something, like, he just comes off as calmer. I think one of his legacies ultimately, and this isn't all on him, but, you know, he didn't want to pay for the WNBA team in Cleveland. That's, like, kind of one of the last things he did as an owner. He didn't want to pay for the Rockers at that point. And I know that's a different league at that point. The game is much healthier now than it was then, and he didn't really even want to buy the Cavs. Like, kind of, he kind of got pushed into it. David Stern, to kind of talked him into it and kind of gave him some, you know, some information to basically allowed him to like buy first round picks, which were like a bargain. It was like $250,000 a year for four picks. And he really bought the team kind of in a really good deal for him financially. So like everything about it, like, was a really good business deal. It seems like pragmatically more than like the Nick Moletti thing of like wanting to bring basketball to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the right change. As much as like you and like, it's not the funnest way for us to talk about this. Like, there is a very big business side to a lot of this, and that impacts a lot of decisions that people make. It's like, I was tweeting about this on Thursday. There's not a basketball reason to me, like, why the courts, when we go back to in arenas and fans and stuff, assuming that happens in the next couple of years, like, there's no reason that the baselines shouldn't look like they do, and like that there shouldn't be space for players on the sidelines. It's just, it's player safety. It's better for them. But like, the amount of money teams would be giving up by giving up those seats is astronomical. And when guys buy these teams, it is business decisions ultimately, mm-hmm. for some of them. I will not like excuse owners being cheap, because you could sell these teams for a ton more money than you paid for them. But you know, all that stuff kind of factors in.
No, it really does. And I know we were talking about Dan Snyder in the last segment, but like, it's funny you mentioned teams being sold, like the Washington football team. I want to call them football club because it rolls out the tongue better, so I'm going with football club from going forward.
It's the big soccer fan and you just coming
in. It really is. You're rubbing off on me, Chris. I think I might go by FIFA and just like really learn the game that way. And then I'll be like obnoxious. I'll be that guy who just learned about soccer, but I'm like so obnoxious about it. I'm like, do you watch soccer? And like, I tell you all about it. Like, I mansplain it to you all the time. But no, like, Dan Snyder, if he wanted to sell his team, and if he was forced to sell because of, at first, this Washington Post article was like, a lot of stuff was coming out saying that it was going to be like one of the biggest scandals ever. And then it kind of, I'm not trying to downplay how severe the situation is in Washington, but kind of just translated more to like a Mark Cuban culture. It felt like a lot like the Maverick story when everything was going wrong there too. I guess I never really thought about the Rockers not being saved, and I know that's something that the Cavs do think about, is bringing a WNBA team to either Cleveland or Columbus, because they know there's a huge, at least LGBT market in Columbus. Like, they could really get a good fan base and support down there compared to Cleveland. No, it's just, he kind of was like kind of forced to buy the team, sure, but at the same time, thank God he did, because the Cavs would not have survived if Gordon Gunn didn't buy the Cavs, and we wouldn't be here talking about this book or this team. Or, I mean, maybe this book, we could be talking about a team that used to exist or something in some way, Chris, but you and I never would have met if Gordon Gunn didn't buy the Cavs.
No, there's like a whole bunch of things. Like, I mean, like, Fear the Sword doesn't exist. Yeah. Like, you know, there's just like, the LeBron James plays for like the Charlotte Bobcats or something. Like, there's just a lot of like bizarre kind of timelines here.
Yeah, LeBron could have rocked the Bobcats drip though.
If LeBron had been on like One Tree Hill in like 2005, would have been like a big cultural moment, honestly.
You think so?
I make that joke because Emeka Okafor was once on One Tree Hill.
Well, that's a reference I didn't get. My middle school girlfriend watched One Tree Hill and made me watch it. So,
wife loves that show.
Well, then. That's good.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And, yeah, okay.
You know what? Happy wife, happy life. Sorry, that wasn't like a sarcastic cough. That's just like my allergies acting up. That was just poorly timed on my part.
I get it. It's okay. I get it. Here's the one I want to wrap this up
on. Let's do it.
Picks come up to this. Pick 83 pick that they purchase becomes Roy Hinton, who they trade for the rights to Brad Doherty.
Great trade.
They use the 84 deal as part of a deal for Mel Turpin. 85, the pick, as part of a deal for Keith Lee. 86, the pick becomes Ron Harper. Two of those four picks are like all-time really good Cavs draft picks. And I don't know what the Cavs could have done, like how bad it ultimately gets if they don't get those picks for the decade. Like, I just don't know what you do if you don't have those picks for a decade.
You're stuck on the treadmill of constant mediocrity with no end in sight, where you just keep cycling through and through. And like, yeah, the Cavs were bad for a while, but then you get foundational. I mean, Brad Doherty is arguably one of the best players in franchise history. Ron Harper is no slouch either, and didn't agree when the Cavs, I mean, Terry Pluto even talks about it, like the Cavs shipped him off to the Clippers, but he had a bum knee, and then he bounced back with the Bulls and was a key piece for them. And like, it just kind of sucks to see as well. But no, just really smart drafting, really savvy trading. Like, it's a slow burn rebuild, but you pick up these foundational pieces, and it's kind of the lulls the current Cavs are going through, is like they haven't found a strong foundational guy. And, like, granted, the Cavs kind of caught lightning in a bottle early when they get Mark Price and Larry Nance in the fold as well. And then you have Doherty, Nance, Price, Hot Rod, and then Harper as well. Like, that's such a good team. Like, it's so crazy how, like, multifaceted and talented this Cavs team was. But, no, Gordon Gunn ponying up the dosh to pay for these picks was huge in that regard. And, hey, now we might have the successor Austin Carr as well and Brad Doherty as color commentator too.
Yeah, at the very least, like, all-time important Cavs guy. So I at least kind of comes out well here, and it's good. Again, Gordon Gund owned the Cavs for, like, two decades. Very, very important that he did it because, again, they're probably not here if he doesn't do that. And this to me is one of my probably two, three favorite chapters so far just because I learned some interesting information about him that I just really didn't know, because he was kind of way more out of the shadows in the shadows of things than Dave Gilbert was.
No, for sure. And, like, I also think that's huge as well, that he didn't have the ego Dan Gutt does, where he's also able to be patient with the process as well, where we are hearing, and Chris, I'm sure you've heard it as well, and I believe Chris Fedor reported it as well, that saying, like, Kobe Altman and the Cavs current staff are kind of under the gun from Dan Gilbert to start making meaningful moves towards the playoffs instead of rebuilding, which kind of feels like foolish. And if Gund was owning the team at this time, at this current juncture, I don't think that'd be the case, which will be a lot less stressful to deal with, because you got to do these things right. You don't want to rush and build up a crappy house on a crappy foundation.
Exactly. All right, Evan, let's get out of here on this. Mm-hmm. You and I have a series coming up, I Fear the Sword. It's going to be multi-week. It's actually planned out. We've been working on it behind the scenes for a little bit.
Evan and Chris planned something for once.
Yeah, and I'm not going to, like, start a series and then just, like, mess it up. But we're going to dive into every need we feel the Cavs have. We're going to break down that need for a single week. So some of the needs are three-point shooting, playmaking, perimeter defense, and high-end talent is sort of a need in its own right. We are going to do this whole series and kind of dive into different aspects of it. And I'm pretty excited to dissect the Cavs in this way.
I am too. I feel like we should include that the Cavs should hire the design firm that did the branding for the Seattle Kraken. Beautiful, beautiful stuff coming out of Seattle's NHL team. But no, I'm really excited to get the series rolling. It's a lot of glaring needs on this Cavs roster, and, like, a lot of weird ways you can address it. Gonna pitch a player idea to you after we're done recording, because I don't want to spoil any of the deets. You guys have to read it and actually give us your thoughts on it instead of just letting me dribble it out with diarrhea of the mouth. So yeah, no, keep your eyes peeled for that. We're doing a fun series as well about former Cavs in the playoff bubble, and things are about to get spicy, where I just talk about the Lakers for my second part. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, Evan gets the fun assignment to write about the Lakers.
I'm Kyle Korver. I thought I threw you a softball with that.
No, him and George Hill is a good combo. That's good. Writing about the Nets was also fun.
That's good.
Yeah. But look for that on Monday. That series, the playoff stuff is out now. And then look for the next section on the whole thing about us and the team needs. You can tell that I'm tired because my brain's not making sense anymore. We're going to be back on Monday with that, and we'll probably talk about some of them on the show in addition to everything else going on. But with that, thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. Enjoy whatever you have planned. Stay safe, wear a mask, and we'll talk to you soon.